Welcome to The Ohm Show, episode number 2. My name is Chris Albrecht, and across the internet from me is none other than Mr. Ohm Malik. Ohm, how are you doing?
I'm well, Chris. Welcome back to the show. You know, it's good to talk to you again.
It's good to be here. I'm feeling relaxed. I got to tell you, I just want to do a little follow-up from last week when we talked about Facebook and just sort of what Facebook has become and what it's become in our lives. I was just on vacation for a week, and I locked my phone in the safe, and it was glorious. Didn't check things. I checked like once a day to make sure somebody, you know, my house wasn't on fire while I was away. But other than that, it was just great to be unplugged and disconnected from the world.
That's right. And a lot of people need to do that and more of that.
Yes, yes. Highly recommend.
Yeah, where did you end up going?
We went to Hawaii, and it was sunny and warm and the opposite of the cold and dark and wet of Seattle.
Come on, I like the cold and the dark and the wet.
I do too. I just, 100 plus days in a row, it kind of wears you down a little bit.
And those are amazing photo opportunities in Pacific Northwest.
I will tell you, it's even lighting all the time.
That's right. And if you like black and white photos like I do, it's perfect.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. But today, Ohm, we're going to talk about Dropbox. It's going public. We knew it was coming. It was a matter of like when they're pulling the trigger, but they've done it. They've filed to go public. There's a ton of stories about it. They're going to be traded under DBX. But you've had a long history with Dropbox. I mean, even going back to the GigOhm days, how Mr. Houston would speak at our structure events. But what was your first reaction just sort of upon hearing that this is now in the works? It's going to happen.
I got introduced to a Dropbox even before they launched. Drew and I met through a friend of ours called, his name is Matt Brezina. He was running a company called Zobni, and we went to the Zobni offices to hang out, and that's where I met Drew, and he talked about Dropbox, and he was still at Y Combinator at that time, and his co-founder and I and him just kind of hung out, and, you know, a couple of months later, they moved into my building in the financial district in San Francisco. So we would run into each other all the time. And when they launched Dropbox, I wrote about it because it was just a fantastic product. And it was dead simple to use. And it was kind of funny to see your neighbors as people who were pitching you. So it was kind of cool.
Yeah, so they have, what, I think 500 million users? Is that what they said, according to their prospectus? And they had 1.1 billion in revenue last year. What do you use Dropbox for mostly?
I think, I'm coming up on like a terabyte of data on Dropbox now. And most of it is backed up on, like I kind of, you know, the way I use my Dropbox is that it syncs up with folders I do a folder for every month, whether it's one folder for documents, one folder for photos, and one folder for random stuff like, you know, books and like, you know, sometimes, you know, like MP3s and stuff like that. But not that I really have MP3s anymore because I use Spotify. But, you know, there are a few Indian songs and classical music, which I keep on my Dropbox. But that's how I kind of use it. And then every year, like I kind of, you know, only do selective sync on it. And so there's a lot of stuff from 2007 to 2018 sitting on my Dropbox. But it's more like a constant invisible backup and access to data. I use it like that. I mean, I never really, you know, got into like proper backups for data and stuff. I can get all my files on any mobile device and any laptop and you know, any computer anywhere. So that makes it a lot easy. This just is an invisible storage locker for me. Just sits in the background.
Yeah. You know, and I should say that I do work for a company called OneHub up here that's also in sort of the enterprise file sharing space, the file sharing space. And it's a competitive, it's not easy. It's competitive. And what do you think, how do you size up Dropbox at this point? You've got Google Drive coming in, right, offering storage. You've got Microsoft OneDrive. They're both, you know, up and coming. Not to mention, I mean, I guess Box goes after sort of the enterprise market. And so they're in a little bit of a different business. But, you know, how do you see Dropbox shaping up on its way to becoming public when they've got these just massive challengers up ahead of them?
Well, I think this is, like, I think of myself as an extreme storage user, to be honest. I use Google, a Google Drive, mostly because I use Google Google Docs for my work. Like I use it for my PowerPoint and all that kind of stuff. So I just pay for Google Docs, and Google Drive essentially is part of it, and it costs, like, I don't know, somewhere around $120 a year or something like that. And I just kind of don't think of that as storage, but there is a terabyte of storage attached to it. And a lot of my documents, and half-written books and all that kind of stuff is just sitting there, and PowerPoints and so on and so forth. So that's how I think of Google Drive, as not just as a drive, but more like a layer underneath the Google Docs and Google spreadsheets and Google, I don't know, what do you call that, PowerPoint? Or,
Yeah. I know, it's just slides or whatever it is. Yeah.
Then I pay, like, I don't know, $100 a year to Apple, which is essentially backing up my iPhone and my iPad and my Mac computers. And sometimes I get access to my Mac desktop files and stuff like that. I don't even know. I don't really think about it rationally, but I just pay them $100 for, I think it's 2 terabytes of storage, but it's essentially all backup. Like, I never really use it for anything else. So I think of it, it's like I'm paying, you know, constant backup to Apple, and the storage is just part of it. So what I'm saying is, and then I pay another $250 a year to Adobe for, like, Adobe Photoshop package with, like, a terabyte of storage, because I put all my raw files and access them online or through different machines. And so I think what I'm saying is that I spend close to, like, $500 on storage every year. And most of the storage, I don't think of storage as storage. I think of an application with storage attached underneath it. And that's why you see the price variation, the photography, application, aka Lightroom and Photoshop, essentially charge more for storage versus, you know, the backup storage from Apple is, like, a lot less expensive, and the Google storage is more expensive because, you know, they also have an application on top of it. And I see, you know, Dropbox more like just an invisible, you know, layer, a storage layer, and, like, more like a commodity than anything else. I like how it syncs with various devices and whatnot, but I don't see it more than like a commodity layer. So I think that's the challenge they have as a company, is, like, how do they get people to pay more premium pricing on storage?
Well, that gets back to the Steve Jobs story, right, where he told Drew that Dropbox was a feature, not a product. And I think you've seen that as sort of over the years, you've seen Dropbox try its various things, right? Like, it had Carousel for photos, and I used that and really liked it at the time, but I switched over to Google Photos because it just worked. It was just much easier and worked better. And then didn't they buy, was it the Mail? What was the Mail client? Yeah, they bought that.
They bought Mail. They had, like, paper. I mean, they've tried many times, but it's really hard to kind of, you know, try one more, application, because most of us are, like, so plugged into what we've been using. Like, once you're on Google Docs, you're kind of, you know, you're kind of keep doing that. And same as with, you know, Apple or whatever service you're using. I think, you know, if you're using Microsoft, like OneDrive is actually pretty spectacularly good, especially if you use Windows and, you know, like Windows, Microsoft Office. I mean, I've been using Microsoft Surface Pro, and my God, it's not, you know, the Microsoft of my youth, to be honest. But again, you know, Dropbox comes in handy. It's like cross-platform, and it syncs, and it does all the translation, and, you know, the files don't get mucked up. But it's really hard for me to give them more money. I mean, I think $100 a year is pretty decent from my standpoint.
Yeah, if I do the math, I think I've held on to the pro account just because I had, I think, because I still have my photos, and I haven't figured out, I haven't had the time to sort of pull them, sync them and pull them all off and then move the photos around, right? Like they have me locked in just because I'm lazy. But I find that I'm only ever going to use it for storage, as near as I can tell. I'm not interested in paper. I'm not interested really in too many collaboration features. I just need them to hold my stuff, hold it securely, and then make it accessible should I need it.
I think you bring up a very valid point. I think older people like you and I tend to hold on to files and things a lot more, and the younger people don't. They just don't care as much about the stuff which is, you know, accumulating on their devices, because their devices are not the PCs and the laptops, but they're more like mobile. So they don't really care as much, and I think that's a bigger challenge for somebody like Dropbox than you know, like not having an application. I think the invisible backup of, you know, Google on Android or Apple on iOS, I think that's a huge challenge for somebody like Dropbox.
Yeah. Yes. It's. I think to your point, it just sort of, it's, I don't know, just it should, if it works the way it's supposed to, it should just fade in the background, and I shouldn't need to add any gewgaws to it or anything, anything on top of it.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. I think there's just too much going on. I think the thing about Dropbox is it is still the best solution out there. Like, it's still spectacularly easy to use, install and use. I mean, I've been using it since before the launch, and I can tell you, man, they just have made it easier and easier and easier to use the application, and the actual behavior of the application hasn't changed that much. Install and forget and just sync. It is so good in terms of, you know, I think that's one thing I would say Steve Jobs would have been proud of, like how invisible they made their product and how good they made it. I really like them as a consumer service, but I think as a business, they have like a whole lot of challenges ahead of them.
Yeah. As we've been talking about, just the space is, there's just tons of big players in there. And there's also, you know, smaller players that are more focused on particular markets. Like we specialize in small SMBs as well. We're at OneHub, you know, that's the niche that we found there a while ago. I want you to, you know, we talked about Mark Zuckerberg last week, and you know, you've seen Drew over the years, you've seen him since before the launch, and he's spoken at events and stuff. What have you noticed about him as he's changed, as the company has grown?
Definitely he's a much more confident and much more outgoing CEO now than he was in the early days. I think he was in the early days more like your classic MIT dropout dude, you know, very hesitant to talk in public and like less. And now he's more comfortable with the role of being a leader of a, you know, $1 billion plus revenue company. I think it would be a interesting to see how he does with the public market and the pressure public markets bring to the table.
Yeah, you know, one thing I want to talk about actually is one of the things that from their filing was that they saved $75 million over the course of 2 years by migrating off AWS, Amazon, onto their own infrastructure. Do you think that, like, is that a bigger thing, or is that just, you know, only companies, obviously Dropbox is huge and it's only for companies of, you know, a certain scale, but, you know, between Facebook and Dropbox. Do you see any kind of trend in that in sort of the cloud space with people migrating away from AWS?
I suspect at some point they had to make a decision that, you know, in order to make their service more almost invisible and better, they needed to take control of their stack and get more out of their infrastructure. I think that may be the only reason I see why they switched to their own platform. That said, you know, it is a crazy thing to point out, but somebody like, you know, Snapchat spends almost, you know, $500 to $700 million a year on Google and Amazon every year.
Yeah.
In like, that's for an unprofitable company. I mean, that is a killer, you know, of a cost. And I think Dropbox, after being in the AWS camp, I remember writing a story about how they need, like, AWS was dependent on Dropbox because it gave them the volume of usage, and Dropbox depended on AWS because it gave them a good way to get jumpstart their business fast. But at some point, it kind of becomes very difficult to keep justifying paying the AWS tax. And Amazon has a very draconian, you know, pricing structure, to be honest. And one of my portfolio companies was like, you know, we had to essentially switch to Google Cloud, and suddenly we went from losing money to making money in 2 months, because we didn't really have the crushing AWS overcharging going on. I mean, I wouldn't say overcharging, just the expensive AWS bill coming due all the time. But, you know, I think I'm glad there is more competition in the cloud market. You know, there's Google and Microsoft and now Amazon obviously is the big behemoth. But these cloud guys can really, you know, take a big bite out of your business. And I think if you one lesson you learn from somebody like Google or Apple or Facebook is, you gotta go in for a complete vertical integration as a cloud company. You need to own your own cloud because you can, you know, squeeze out more performance from it.
Yeah, and our friend Derek Harris over at, he has an architect newsletter. We, you know, he was a cloud writer at GigaOm with us, and he was saying that it's for them migrating off AWS, it's all about control. And when you're storing user sensitive data, like, you just being to your point, just like not having to rely on a third party, or if something occurs, you don't have to go, you're removing an extra hop, and that can make all the difference when you're dealing with sensitive information like that.
Yeah, I think there is many reasons. There's sensitive information, there is the cost, and like, costs are definitely a big deal for any company. I think that would, you know, one of the, talking about the costs, you know, Dropbox will have to become a little bit more careful in its spending, and it will have to lower its, you know, its very lavish lifestyle as a public company, like, because they aren't making that much money, like, you know, like, let's say a Facebook or a Google, and you know, the Wall Street can be pretty watchful of, you know, these kind of things. So I guess, you know, having control of their own cloud is also a good thing.
Do you think this marks any kind of end of an era? Like, Dropbox has been around for 10 years, right? And it's going public. You know, Box went public, Spotify in the wings. You know, of that sort of, after the bubble burst, the .com bubble burst, there was that lull, and then you got the resurgent, like, Web 2.0 stuff that rose. Like, do you think, just generationally speaking, do you see this as any sort of, I don't know, any significance around that?
Well, I think the big significance here is that if you want to build a meaningful company, it still takes between 7 to 10 years. Like, $1 billion is a good threshold as a company to have these days, because you're not competing in a small regional market. You're looking at a, you know, pan global market. So if you, you know, $1 billion revenue is actually pretty good table stakes as a consumer company. And I think it takes between 7 to 10 years. I mean, you look at Uber, it's taken them, I don't know, 6.5 to 7 years to get to $1 billion in revenue. And, you know, you look at Spotify. I mean, all these things take time. I don't think, you know, you can be an overnight success. Overnight success is essentially between 7 and 10 years. I mean, it just is. And I think anyone who's looking at, you know, building a great business should look at Dropbox and just say, you know, that's how you survive. Look at Box. I mean, they've been around forever, and, you know, and they have also had to work hard to be around forever. I think it takes just a long time.
Well, now I want to talk kind of bigger picture here a little bit. One, where do you see, like, the thing about storage, right, is that it just, you get more of it for less. It's just the trajectory it's going. Have you noticed anything just in terms of where the cost of storage is going and how that may or may not impact Dropbox and or the whole space?
I mean, depends on what do you mean by cost of storage. The cost of storage at a wholesale level, aka at the level of, you know, Dropbox and Amazon, I mean, it's pretty low already. Like, it's so low, and it'll keep going lower and lower. So I think now the question is, how do you make that commodity, you know, service and add some value on top of it? So Amazon has the S3, which is so cheap. You can just, you know, back up everything to Amazon S3 and be good with it. But however, they charge you a lot of money to transfer the files out of S3 into your server. So that's how you get, you pay for it. And I think there will be ways for companies to kind of figure out how to charge more for it. I think Box is now starting to charge for security, enterprise security around storage, right? And policy security, sharing with encryption. That's they're just that company. Storage is how they offer those services. You need to kind of do the same thing, with Dropbox. I think Dropbox needs to figure out what those services are.
Yeah, and I think there's also probably a whole bunch of stuff springing up around compliance. You know, there's GDPR happening in May that, you know, the Europe is putting into effect, and so people are going to not just be able to. People are going to be more concerned about where their data is located and how it's being stored. And there's going to be all sorts of, you know, as data breaches just happen all the time, you know, there are a lot of security layers you can throw on top of there to add more value.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if the GDPR is a challenge for companies like Dropbox. I think it's a huge headache for everyone from Google to Facebook to Dropbox, because, you know, it touches on a lot of different, you know, legislations, regional legislations and regulations. So, but I do think if I was to think about what Dropbox needs to do in the future, I would say they need to figure out very quickly what are the applications they can go after. And it's like by now that, you know, they had the carousel, was actually a great idea.
Yeah. Right? No, I loved it.
Right. And Dropbox plugin for, you know, Lightroom would have been an even better idea than Carousel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Or like I like how you can save your docs directly to Microsoft documents directly to Dropbox. And I think those kind of, you know, applications is what they need to do, but so far they're batting zero. You know, on that one.
Yeah.
So I hate to say it, but, like, you know, as far as their storage service is concerned, it's still A++ in my books. I mean, I can't hate on the core service. Everything else, it just is like, man, you know, it's really hard.
Well, I think that just that is the entire conversation, right? Like, storage works great. It's something people just want to have work, and they don't want to fuss with anything else on top of it.
But, you know, again, I would say that it's been great to watch this company evolve from essentially just two guys in a tiny apartment in San Francisco to, like, this big gigantic company going public. you know, it gives me a lot of hope in, and, you know, makes me happy to see young entrepreneurs actually make their dreams come true. They're, you know, they had a vision and they made it happen. They changed the behavior of how people store and, you know, carry their documents. I mean, it's an insanely amazing story. And I'm really happy to see, you know, the Dropbox team, you know, kind of go in public. I hope, you know, they do well. But my God, that S1, it's not great reading. Just like Box's S1 was not great reading either. So, I mean, you know, it's like they have only, what, 2% of their user base is paying for the entire,
yeah, for everybody else,
500 million plus. Not, that does not, you know, look good.
No.
I mean, when you look at somebody like Spotify, which has like almost 25 to 30% of their user base is premium, you know, premium subscribers. And, you know, you look at other companies like Slack, which is what, 30 to 40% of their people are paying customers. So I think they have a lot of work cut out for them.
Yes.
Yeah. And plus great guys. I mean, I really love that great guys, you know, achieving what they set out to do and succeeding. I kind of like that.
Yeah. Well, what's not to like about it? I think that's a pretty good place to end this Dropbox discussion, to drop it, as one might say, if they were making a really bad joke. Hey, before we go, I want to know, what are you reading right now?
You know, right now I'm reading a book called The Grid. It's about the America's grid and how weak it is by Gretchen Bark. B-A-K-K-E is, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Sure.
Gretchen Bake.
Okay.
Bach, I don't know. And it's a great book. It's a slightly older book, but it's just an amazing understanding of how the American electricity grid came about and you know, what are the weak links now.
Yeah, it sounds like it would keep me up at night.
No, it's not. It's not. But it's just a fascinating understanding of the American infrastructure, you know, boom and of the time when America actually took pride in building its infrastructure.
Awesome. Well, as someone who's, you know, I live in an area where the wires are still above ground, so my power goes out all the time whenever windstorms kick in. I would appreciate a little strengthening of the electrical infrastructure, but, you know, whatever happens, happens.
So before we go, can I ask, like, what have you been up to in terms of reading books, creating? How's your photography going?
Photography is going pretty well. You know, again, inspired by last week's chat, you know, I actually downgraded my iPhone from a 7 Plus down to the SE, and then I bought a used Panasonic LX10, and I carried that with me on vacation everywhere. That's a fantastic little point-and-shoot camera, but it opens up to like a 1.4, so it's got a really fast lens. You can just get really lovely shots on that. So I really loved that. And then on vacation, I was reading a book that's actually a lot of fun called The Elements of Eloquence. And I can't remember who wrote it. I think the guy's name is Forsyth. I could be wrong. But that's just, it's this weird, it's really well written. It's very fast paced, but he just goes through all these kind of elements of language that are used by like Shakespeare and Hemingway and all these great writers, and just sort of breaking down how to turn a great phrase and what are the elements of that. And it's actually, I thought it was going to be dry, but it's actually a lot of fun to read.
Maybe I should read that because, you know, I could use a little witty turn of the phrase in my podcast.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And it's
you,
not
you
like
are supposed
readings.
To disagree with me on that.
Well, you know what? What you know, I'm supposed to say, oh no, you're great as you are. No, don't change.
Exactly.
Sorry, I forgot my role as the sidekick / sycophant.
Just gushing over. I never said you were a sycophant.
You didn't.
All right, brother.
All right, well, Om, thank you so much. Until next time, have a great week.
You too. Take care.